Good evening. This is your good friend Dan in Little Saigon, Seattle. It's a fine sort of mid-spring evening, soon to be summer next month, so they say. When the fires across the lighted ways of the infinite glassiness of the Glimbus realm of the western part of these United States begins, it really does begin to catch fire. And there'll be a brown haze across the sky, as if a French bulldog had vomited and pooped in the sky and had left it brown and yellow and diseased. And it will be very hard to breathe in July and August, but it's going to be a wonderful summer. And so it's May the 4th, 2019, the day before Cinco de Mayo, which celebrates the victory over the motherfucking French Empire by the Mexican Army at the Battle of Puebla, in 1862. If you wonder what I'm doing here, if you hear me blowing out some stuff, I am using my volcano. If you don't know what a volcano is, I'm not going to tell you. You could research it. You could think it's a song by some mid-90s kind of, you know, alternative rock band. You might be right. I don't know. I also got my Mexican Coke next to me. It says refresco. I think that means awesome. But needless to say, it's my Mexican Coca-Cola Cinco de Mayo Eve celebration of the fucking victory over the motherfucking French. I don't want to beat up on the French too much because France is going through some changes. Some rearranges, you know, like that song from The Brady Bunch goes, you know, about, what was it? What was his name? Peter? Peter getting older and going through puberty. Peter going through puberty, I think. If you remember the fucking Brady Bunch, you fuck. Anyways, France is going through some changes, some rearranges, and I don't know, the Yellow Vest and the Notre Dame Cathedral catching fire. These are not things that bring peace to the soul, but it's okay. Anyways, you haven't heard from me in a while. I have been working. I have a job. Technically, I'm working right now. I am on call for my new job. I am a contractor, second-tier computer programmer, Oompa Loompa, at Willy Wonka's, you know, at Willy Wonka's sociopathic and on the spectrum kind of slightly evil and messed up software factory across the pond. That's as much as I want to say. It's near a place called Redmond, Washington. That's all I want to say because I like the job. I like the people I'm working with. I know the company is a company I don't love, but it's a job. And these days, everybody works for the fucking crocodile. And if you don't know what I mean when I say crocodile, I mean basically the government. Or rather, the nexus of government and mega corporations that are basically fucking us every fucking day. I mean the crocodile. We all work for the crocodile. None of us are without sin. We are in a Babylonian captivity of the soul. We are struggling and we are denizens of a wretched realm. It's filled with blimbus and glimpf. And that's all you need to know. But yeah, I started my new job. I had a weird incident on the bus, as you well know. I accidentally was riding the Metro, you know, a couple weeks ago. I was riding the Metro and I accidentally had a moment of candidness, being candid and honest, and talking about my own perspective on truth. It doesn't mean I'm right, but I was simply being honest about my perspective and I was having a conversation. And the thing about the Metro bus on our way to Willy Wonka's on the spectrum sociopathic software factory is that it's a time of quiet meditation for the bus riders to stare at their glowing rectangles gormlessly like the apes from 2001 looking at the fucking monolith. And at that moment you ask yourself, is there going to be a robot apocalypse? And at that moment you realize, you stupid fuck, the robot apocalypse, it came, it saw, it conquered. The people are not using these fucking phones. The phones are using the fucking people. You say stuff like that on the bus during their quiet time and people get upset. And the bus driver tells you, listen, buddy, I'm going to have to kick you off because you're thinking thoughts you're not supposed to think. But yeah, the job's going okay. It's money. It's good money. I am still technically on the run from my creditors, but I really don't give a fuck. They include the evil banks. And from my perspective, and it may seem like a rationalization, every debt I currently owe is an unreasonable and evil debt. So I have decided to declare, you know, myself debt-free. I know that eventually the fuckers will catch up with me. I know they took my fucking money, you know, during my IRS dream. I wasn't going to turn in a fucking return this year. I stopped doing that. I'm an anarchist. What the fuck am I doing tax returns? But anyways, yeah, I thought I was going to get money back, and then they showed me that transaction with the Department of Education because they didn't pay my evil student loans for an education and bullshit. Yeah, fuck you too. Fuck everybody that thinks this machine is going to be here for you when you need it. Yes, some people get help. There are people who get saved by the crocodile. This is a true statement. But I hate to break it to you. If the crocodile comes to your fucking door bringing a fucking bucket of gold, do yourself a favor and put on your thinking hat and put on your seeing glasses, and you'll see a fucking column of smoke in the distance of some place where that fucking crocodile just stole the fucking gold and set somebody's house on fire and ate some babies. So yeah, the crocodile, the government, the crocodile, the nexus of these fucking corporations that are on corporate welfare and the government, yeah, sometimes they bring you a bucket of gold, but you, if you have eyes to see and ears to hear, you can tell that someone else got fucked. Just a little FYI. If you think the crocodile is going to be there for you, just remember, there were people that made money with Bernie Madoff. There were people that made lots of money flipping houses in the early 2000s and then got out just in time. There are people that make money off of every fucking pyramid scheme in human history. All that proves is you don't want to be the bag holder. If you're going to be involved in fucked up schemes, don't be without a seat when the music stops, okay? Don't play the game of musical chairs unless you know that you've got to be near a seat. Anywho, the job is going fine. I have a list of things to talk about. I'm going to try to, like, use a list going on. I got to say, I've been kind of stressed out. It's one of the reasons why I haven't done any podcasts. The new job is going okay, mainly because the people I work with seem to be decent enough people. My boss, I technically have two bosses, but my bosses, I have two bosses, but my bosses are pretty cool. And actually, I have three bosses, really. But my three bosses are pretty cool. They mostly get along. Two of the bosses fight with each other all the time, and I feel like I should call a marriage counselor. But I think I would get in trouble if I said that. I don't want to lose the job. But they're pretty cool people. And the people I work with, my peers on the team, they're all decent enough dudes, men and women. They're all good people. They're all smart. They're all people that I hope that I can work with for as long as I can work there. I know I have mixed feelings about that company, okay? I know I have mixed feelings about the Oompa Loompas, which I am. I'm an orange badge Oompa Loompa, and the Smurfs, which are the blue badges. I have mixed feelings about the hierarchy of that place. But at the same time, it's a good job. And we all work for the fucking crocodile. We do. None of us is without sin. We have been living in an open-air prison all of our lives, and for the most part, if you want to know when this all began, you might ask yourself, what happened during those years between the end of the Revolutionary War, I believe in 1783 or 1782, could be off on that one, what happened between the end of the American Revolutionary War and the Constitution? Those were years that, there were brief years of actual liberty. This was a free country for about 5 or 6 years. Why couldn't it be free for 500 or 600? You see, it's funny, that part of our history gets flushed down the toilet. We don't talk about the Articles of Confederation much. I'll tell you what, though, I would wager dollars of donuts, if the Declaration of Independence had been our only document, we probably wouldn't have gone around murdering Native Americans. I would wager that. I think we would have had a more rational response to the people that were already living here. You kind of need to build giant armies to do giant carnage. Anyways, I don't know why I went off on that tangent. But the robot apocalypse has arrived. The first subject I was going to talk about is this whole thing about, this whole thing about tyranny. Tyranny only works in a robot world. In a human world, in a world of making choices and free will, tyranny only leads to extinction. So here's the deal. I think human beings are going to become extinct one way or the other. We're either going to become so destroyed by technology and merged with it that we become completely and impossibly without free will. We'll be robots. Okay? We will no longer have the capacity to make actual choices. Or we'll be wiped out. And if there is a robot apocalypse day, I think it's already come and gone, but if there's a day when it happens, it could just as easily be a bunch of Amazon deliveries, as much as a robot with a fucking flamethrower. I don't think it's going to be robots with flamethrowers. I think it's going to be Amazon deliveries and, fucking online pharmaceutical deliveries and fucking all kinds of fucking shit going wrong at the same time. And at first, it'll seem so fucking, this just seems so just like a normal fucking accident on the internet. But that's how it will be. It won't be giant robots with laser cannons. It won't be a nuclear war. The robots probably won't be that fucking stupid. But it could be a delivery of your heart medication that's just not the right stuff, if you know what I mean. He could swap your prescriptions, that robot, when he takes over. So that's something to think about. I don't know. I was going to talk about the STEM crisis issue. I don't really want to say a lot about that. It's one of those things where when I think about the STEM crisis, and if you don't know what the STEM crisis is, the STEM crisis is this supposed crisis of not having enough scientists, technologists, engineers, and mathematicians to fill the jobs in our country, so we have to import people from India, China, Russia, Europe, lots of places. That's the STEM crisis. But what I'm supposed to fucking believe whenever I hear STEM crisis is that we have these great public schools and universities. On the one hand, we have these great fucking public schools and universities. On the other hand, there's a fucking STEM crisis. This doesn't make a lot of fucking sense. We have a lot of unemployed people. We have a lot of people who have fallen off the economic radar, but we have a fucking STEM crisis. The only conclusion I can come to, and this will be the end of my STEM crisis rant, which in reality is a rant against public schools, the only conclusion I can come to is our public schools suck. And the smartest thing you could do is educate your kid at home for as long as you can. It's true, you'll probably have to send them to high school for a couple years. You'll probably have to have them get the magical document that says they've been told all the right shit by their Prussian teachers. You'll probably have to fucking do that so they can get their little exposure to the Prussian educational system. And that means from Prussia, the German state that no longer exists, where all great ideas came from, you fuck. Yeah, you might have to do that, but if you can, homeschool your kids for as long as you can. Otherwise, they will be deformed. The public schools are a fucking failure. A few months ago, some dude was interacting with me on SoundCloud, and holy fuck, he knew I was an anarchist, but he told me the way for me to get a job, because I was without work, I was between contracts, is to become a public school teacher. And I thought to myself, how fucking stupid can you be? You listen to my podcasts. In what sense do you think I believe in that fucking system? Well, now, and I'll admit, I did. I went and got my food stamp card a couple months ago. I did that. I was actually looking for money to pay for rent. I'll admit to that. I will admit that I know that I am an anarchist in a prison. I'll admit to that. I admit to my crime of being an anarchist in a prison. Okay? And I survive as well as I can, and it's that or become homeless or worse. I don't know. The STEM crisis, if there is a STEM crisis, is a giant F minus for public schools. That is the truth. We have failed the young people. That is the truth. Anyways, that's enough on that. 23andMe. I had this weird thought over lunch the other day with people, and I think you might be interested in it. So, anyways, a number of months ago, my brother was doing the whole, I think it was 23andMe or one of these genetic testing sites. And he got my sister to do it. Actually, I have six sisters, you know, just for, I know I've said this before. One is in heaven, Nancy's in heaven, but I have five still on earth, and they're wonderful, and I have one brother. And George got on the whole thing about getting genetic testing, and I won't do it. Probably it's pointless because the, you know, the army got all kinds of genetic material from me before I left. So if I, there is a database, quote unquote, I'm already in it. Doesn't matter. But anyways, he's been on it, and he said he wanted me to do it, and I said no, I don't need to do that. And he, you know, he was emphatic, but I refused. But he got tested, and a couple of my sisters got tested, and they found out how much Neanderthal they were, and they found out that they were probably 100 times more Cherokee than Elizabeth Warren, which means not really Cherokee at all. But hey. No, they found out they had some Neanderthal. They were a little bit country, a little bit rock and roll. But we also found out something else kind of interesting because of this genetic testing. And I'm going to take another little puff from my volcano before I continue. Yeah, we found out something interesting. My maternal grandfather, meaning the father of my mom, was not my mom's father and was also not my grandfather. I have a secret grandfather I did not know about. And I, you know what? I realized the other day, this is shit that's going to happen. Like, people are going to learn shit if they do this. And it's and maybe it's stuff people want to know. Maybe it's stuff they don't want to know. But it's like, who's your daddy? I hate to break it to you. Hospitals are not perfect places. I know it seems like I'm going off on a tangent, but I'm not. I'm going to take another little puff here. Hospitals are not perfect places, okay? When I was working in healthcare informatics, bioinformatics, I was more familiar with these statistics. But back in the day, and I do not believe these numbers have improved much, or it probably gotten worse. Back in the day, the number of Americans, not all humans, but Americans, who died in hospitals every year due to simply going to the hospital, which means hospital incompetence, hospital failure, the number of Americans that get killed every year because hospitals screw up, that number was around 100,000. And I think it's actually higher than that. And most of those were due to hospital-acquired infection. But a lot of stuff happens that isn't even death, and it's well understood. You know, you may not realize this, but many years ago, surgical nurses started marking parts of people's bodies, saying things like, don't cut this off. You need to cut this off. Don't remove this, remove this. They would take Sharpies and write on the patients, okay? Don't remove this leg, remove this other leg. And you could say to me, Dan, that's crazy. No, that's actually fucking true. Because surgeons were doing things like amputating the wrong fucking leg or removing the wrong fucking organ. Oh, it was appendicitis? I thought I was supposed to take some chunk of the liver out, you know? Yeah, it's pretty messed up and it's true. So what you need to know from my little rant, and I'm going to link this to 23andMe, is hospitals are not perfect places. They screw up. Hospitals fuck up. If you work in a hospital and you're offended by that, I'm really, really sorry, but not sorry. Hospitals are human places. Any place run by humans, or frankly anything, including supernatural machines or aliens, if you believe in that bullshit, any earthly thing is going to be imperfect. Hospitals are imperfect, and they might be horribly imperfect. So back in the day, you know, way back when, if you don't think that babies got swapped, if you don't think that moms went home after giving birth in a hospital with the wrong baby, you're living in a fucking fantasy world, okay? Babies were swapped. It is entirely plausible. There's a percentage of people who do the 23andMe, and they find out their parents were not their parents, and then their parents find out, fuck, that's not my kid. And that's a lawsuit. So here's my crazy conspiracy theory. And this is going to be, you know, I don't know how much more I'll rant on this, but I'll just leave you to think about it, to stew in your juices on this one. I believe that all of these genetic testing companies started detecting this almost immediately, and they probably went directly to hospital systems. Because if you found out that a hospital system had a percentage, like a high percentage of holy fuck, you went home with the wrong baby, that's not just lawsuits, okay? Lawsuits are bad enough, all right? That is like major negative in terms of people wanting to have their kid in a hospital. I hate to break it to you folks, but healthcare is a business. Medicine is a business, and this is not good for business. So my crazy conspiracy theory is I think 23andMe and these companies have been basically doing these backroom deals between themselves and the hospital systems so that they can find out about these people and the lawyers can swoop in and say, here's $1 million, keep your mouth shut. That's it. That's what they're doing. Here's $1 million or 5 million. They found the magic number. It's probably between $1 million and $10 million, and they're swooping in and saying, listen, I know that you were swapped. And I know that you parents got, you know, the wrong amount. So there's like, you know, there's at least five victims in this model. At least five people need to be restored. So I guess each situation would cost about $5 million. And for $5 million, the people keep their mouth shut about the babies being swapped. And yeah, they get their money. And I think they must be doing that. There's no way in hell that people are not finding out that their parents are not their parents. And there's no way in hell that people are happy about that. If you think you'd be happy to find out that you went home with the wrong baby, no one's happy about that. I'm not saying that you suddenly say, I reject thee, child. No. You raised the child. They're your parents. It just doesn't happen like it's going to be rejection. But there's got to be some anger and some processing. So yeah, that's my one of my weird conspiracy theories for the week, that these online genetic testing places are working with the hospital systems to sort of keep this little subject secret. You know, you went home with the wrong baby. Who's your daddy problem? Who's your mommy? Who's your mommy and who's your daddy? I hate to break it to you, but if your parents gave birth in a hospital, you might not know. I'm sorry, but you might not know. It's terrible. It's sad. It's real. It's true. There are cases. I'm not saying all cases. I'm hoping it's less than 5%. I'm hoping it's less than a half a percent. But there are cases where, yeah, even today with genetic testing, there are probably cases where parents go home with the wrong kids. It's a human system. Okay? No amount of work or effort, genetic testing or otherwise, will prevent human failure. Anyways, what's the next fucking topic? So there's this thing at work, this piece of software. And so, you know, I'm supposed to be working right now. I should be monitoring this pipeline. Oh, good news. It's at step 103. You don't know what that means. You don't need to know what that means. It's at step 103 and it's processing and everything's fine. It's a big ETL pipeline. If you don't know what ETL is, it's extract, transform, load. It's basically how you get data in the databases, files and rest sources and all types of data streams, and you feed them into the database and you build out data warehouses and data marts and all kinds of great crap. And we're at step 103, so everything's fine and I'm fine. But we have a chunk of software at work called the Custolizer. I'm not going to tell you what that means. You can do your own research, but it's called the Custolizer. And when I first heard about the Custolizer, I didn't know how it was spelled. I only heard it, so I immediately thought of Jacques Cousteau. And I thought to myself, holy fuck, Willy Wonka's absurdly, strangely sociopathic and on the spectrum software factory has come up with something called the Custolizer. And what it is, it's sort of shaped like the TARDIS from, you know, Doctor Who or like any phone booth. You go into the Custolizer as you, and you come out as you, but the Jacques Cousteau version of you. I know, and I knew then, and I know now that's not what the Custolizer does, but I have a whimsical Irish mind, and I want to imagine that maybe the Custolizer does turn people into Jacques Cousteau. I want to believe that. in the digital fucking wilderness of nothing, out there in the wasteland, out there on the edge of the oblivion, out there in the silicon endless abyss of the infinite woe of an IT worker that stares at the green lights and the red lights and the LED screens and knows that nothing can save him or her, nothing. That you're stuck out there in the digital wilderness at a server farm or in some cube writing code, and your code is a load, and you are nothing but a hunted French bulldog, and that's the truth. But yeah, I thought the Coustalizer, I thought it'd be really cool if there was some type of a phone booth that you walked into. But A, Coustalizer is not spelled like Cousteau, and B, it does not turn people into Jacques Cousteau. I wish it did. I do, whimsically so. As an Oompa Loompa worker, as a lower tier slave, I wish that there was a box I could walk into and come out as Jacques Cousteau, but there isn't. Next up on topics. Now, the noisiness of my own desecration. The noiselessness of my own desperation. The noiselessness of my own deterioration. I don't know. And the next topic's a weird one. I was thinking about, so I haven't seen the doctor since 2013, just after my ex-wife dumped me. And I don't want to talk about my ex-wife. She has a right to her own world. I hope she's happy. I don't know what she's up to. But in 2013, after my ex-wife dumped me, I went and got a physical. And my health was okay, but I was kind of stressed out. And I haven't seen a doctor since then. I've been thinking about my health. I do get these weird pains at night, you know, chest pains and radiating pains up and down the arms. Sometimes it feels like a giant with a metal hand is squeezing my heart, but I'm not convinced that these are reasons to go see the doctor. You know, I feel like going down that route opens doors that I don't really want to open. Yeah, I know that you're saying to yourself, well, Dan, you're just like every other guy. You won't see the doctor until you die. And I will tell you, I will not see the doctor. And even if I die, and especially if I'm dead, as a final request, you don't need to send me to the doctor. I'm dead. I don't need a doctor. That's all I'm going to say about that. But, you know, as you get older, and you have to admit this to yourself, you end up getting more and more Blebuzol and Hyroclap and Zlimbic stuck in your glimbus zone. You get more stuff that drips from your anus that burns, and you get more stuff that burns inside. As you get older, you eat a salad and it starts tearing your outsides inside or your insides outside. Or maybe the food is poison and you're beginning to realize this as you get older. I mean, the V8 juice is not, I used to think the V8 juice was good for me, but now I think the free V8, and that's the thing. At Willy Wonka's software factory, every worker gets access to free Coca-Cola and free V8 and other things that probably aren't as bad for you. But I used to think the V8 was like, holy shit, these are my vegetables. But what if the V8 is mostly glyphosate? What if every time I drank a V8, I was drinking 10% liquid glyphosate? I know you don't want to think about it. I'm sorry you don't want to think about it, but this is reality. We are still on step 103, and I hope we're moving to 104. You don't need to know what this all means, but we are on step 103, and I haven't gotten any mean emails, and my boss has not IM'd me on Willy Wonka's, you know, software. But that's the thing, though. As you get older, you get the hullabaloo. You get that stuff happening inside of you, and I'm of the opinion that the next time I see the doctor, and I, so you know, I don't get to see good doctors any longer. I had a really good doctor in Fremont named Dr. Khan. I haven't seen him in years. He's an awesome doctor. But no, the doctors I see now, their offices are in alleyways and down by the wharf. Their offices are in places, and their office hours are at times that are only convenient to those of us who struggle in the night, for those of us who shake and burn. And when they see me, they say, how is your glimpf and your blimpus? And I say, my blimpus is fine, but my Rimuzek and my Rimuli are trunculating. And they say, well, here's some Sklim and some Haverzak. And we got this over at the dumpster. And this is someone's used bottle of a new antidepressant called Comuzex. And it's contraindicating, you know, some sort of Gombas. And so if you don't want Gombas, don't take it. And what I tell them is, will you just do more of your surgeries? They do these surgeries for me. They're eldritch rites. They're the kinds of things you read about in H.P. Lovecraft. They take me to a dark, dark place in the back alleys of Seattle. They take me to an underground lair, and they have this scoop, and they scoop out all my diseased tissue and all my dead and dying flesh from the inside. And they replace it with metal shavings and broken glass and sawdust and regret and sadness and probably gravel. And then they sew me back up and I feel better. So yeah, I probably should see the doctor. It's probably not good to have these weird pains that go up and down my spine, or the feeling that an elephant is sitting on my chest. On the other hand, I could be a jackass and this could all be bullshit. I self-treat. I practice self-surgery. I do all kinds of things. I will treat my glimbus by just, you know, putting more Tabasco sauce in my food. I will treat my humfra bump, but just by drinking a little bit more Rainier beer. And it works until it doesn't. Here's the thing. Here's one of the rules of life. I just drank some Mexican Coke. Sorry about that. There are many rules to life, and I'll tell you a few as time goes on. Here's some of the rules that you need to know about life. Rule number one is probably most of the people on the planet are worse off than you. This should make you feel better. That's the first rule of life. Probably you may not believe this, especially, but if you're an American, and I know there are poor Americans and homeless Americans, but if you're American, statistics show that you're probably better off than almost everybody else. But that doesn't mean you're doing well. You could actually be doing really shitty. But remember that as shitty a situation, as horrible a situation as you're in, chances are the vast majority, at least 50% of more people on Earth, are in a worse situation. Okay, that should make you feel better. That's rule one. Rule two, every day after today is going to be worse. So you should be happy about today. You should embrace today. Tomorrow is going to be terrible. It's going to be fucking terrible. Be happy about today. Those are the two rules of life. I don't know. There's other rules too. But I went off on that tangent thinking about my blimp and my hullabaloo. And here's the thing about illnesses as you get older. You end up taking drugs. As you get older, you end up taking drugs that get weirder and weirder names. Like, you know you're going to be dead soon when they hand you, well, Dan, this is Xylotex Gimbus 12. And this is going to help you with your flimpus and your drainage and the stuff coming out of your eyeballs. And we know that you're like, you know, 70 years old, but you look 100 and your bones are liquefying from all the poisons. But this will help with the flimp and the flumui. This will help you pump out the blombus and replace it with fluids and electrolytes and other things. And you're going to be fine. And when you take a drug with a long, weird name, you know you'll be dead soon. Anyways, next topic, because we talked enough about healthcare, nothing about being healthy. I'm going to check status, though. We're at step 103. Now we're at step 110. We're at step 110. I repeat, but we're not at the point of the Coustalizer. The Coustalizer has not kicked in yet, but we are at step 110. This is amazing. I'm just reporting this for people. It's Saturday night. And it's 7:33 p.m. and we are at step 110 and I feel fantastic and all my blimpus is draining. So I've been eating beef jerky. I don't normally eat beef jerky, but I've been eating some beef jerky the last couple weeks. I don't know why. I think it's related to one of my 12 disorders, but I've been eating beef jerky. And there's this beef jerky I pick up at the store called Old Trapper Jerky. And I feel like it's not... I don't know. I love the name and I hate the name. Old Trapper Jerky. It's like you say to yourself, well, listen, if I buy this Old Trapper Jerky, is it really made of dudes who have been living up in the woods hunting coyotes and raccoons and squirrels and eating grizzly bear stew, and then they get hunted, which is so fucking meta, and then they get turned into jerky? So they're literally hunting and killing old trappers, people who are trapping beaver. If there's like 50 of them left, maybe they found the 50 trappers that were left and basically bred them, you know, almost some fucked up version of that, like that movie The Island from 2005, except for in this case, instead of being, you know, Gumbus tubes for organs, they're actually just being raised to be jerky as trappers. But yeah, Old Trapper Jerky. And I thought, well, fuck, are there actually old trappers in here? Is it like, is Grizzly Adams, you know, in here somewhere? I just don't know. I think that if I found out that Old Trapper Jerky was made of trappers, I think I would scream in the night like Charlton Heston and go get some more Old Trapper Jerky. I'm kidding. I'm a Christian. I cannot do that. But all the food is poison. Like that one commercial, that PSA from the Tim and Eric show from so long ago on Adult Swim. All the food is poison. All the food is poison. It really is poison. You should YouTube that. All the food is poison. Tim and Eric show. All the fucking food is poison. The glimp is in the glob. All of it's there. You eat it. It distributes all types of clampus and munderzite around your body and you decay. And that's it. And you're gone. We are at step. Let's see. We're still at step 110. Oh, what is this next topic? It's too serious. I don't know if I want to talk about it. Well, actually, it's kind of a positive one. So I've been ranting on a serious level about how wouldn't it be nice if the human race voluntarily for 2 weeks every year didn't have any war. Like the wars all, every war had a truce for 2 weeks every year. And I want to take it a step further. Imagine if there were 2 weeks every year where people just didn't kill each other or blow each other up, where for 2 weeks every year, everyone, including the sociopaths and the scumbags, but we'd know who they were. This is the good news about the 2 weeks. They're smart. If they're not smart enough to stop, we will find out who they are and it'll be easy to get rid of them. But for 2 weeks every year, no raping, no killing, no war, no violence, no blowing people up, no fucking being a bully. For 2 weeks every year. For 2 weeks, we just live in peace with each other every year. No dropping bombs or white phosphorus. No Palestinians launching rockets against Israel. No Israel attacking them with flechettes and depleted uranium and other things. Just for 2 weeks every fucking year. And I actually think people could do it. Like, and maybe not everyone, but like I said, the people that couldn't do it, it just would be easier to spot them because essentially we would all know who they were now. And yeah, there'd be no getting away with it any longer, okay? But then all of a sudden people would say, well, Dan, you know, we really love this two-week holiday, but we were thinking, could we have 2 months a year? And so that's the problem, is I actually think people... I think enough people could do it that this would be meaningful, that the air would be cleaner, that people's lives for at least 2 weeks would not be so fucking brutal. I think for 2 weeks a year, we could all decide not to kill each other, to not rape each other, to not murder each other, to not abuse children, to not participate in human slavery and in human trafficking. For 2 weeks every year, I think we could do it. And what's better than that is I think people would wake up out of their fucking dystopic backward reality of staring at their fucking smartphone. And oh, by the way, everything in the current era is ironically named. If they call it a smartphone, it doesn't make you smarter. If they call it a Patriot Act, it's not patriotic, okay? It really fucking isn't. If they call it a war on drugs or a war on poverty, or God forbid, they sell you the cocaine dope of the soul, a war on terror, it's ironically named. But imagine if for 2 weeks a year we didn't kill each other. I know you're saying, well, Dan, that's just like, you know, that's just like a lyric from a John Lennon song. Here's the thing. I like John Lennon, but I'm fairly convinced he was some kind of a communist, too. I like him, but, you know, he and I would not agree probably on everything. But yeah, he was right. Wouldn't it be great if on some level the world could embrace peace, if only for 2 fucking weeks a year? Now, one of the common comebacks of people, especially because, you know, full disclosure, I was in the Army a long time ago. I was never in combat. I was briefly on active duty for about three and a half years, and then I was in the reserves. I spent a year in Korea, technically a year plus a couple months, because the following year I went back again for a military exercise. You know, we were deployed to Busan, blah, blah, blah. Don't want to talk about it. But I've never been in combat, so I don't have anything useful to say about actual war. I studied military history in graduate school. So if you're asking, where is Dan coming from on this? Listen, I went down the road of rationalizing why war happens. But I just gave up on it, especially after I got out. But I saw things in the peacetime army that were disturbing to me, you know, and were violations of honor. And I thought, well, fuck. If people behave this shitty in peacetime, why would anyone think they're going to behave better in times of trouble, in war? I think that's bullshit. This idea of people rising to the occasion, I hate to break it to you, when times get tough, 9 out of 10 people sink to their own level. If they're jerks, they remain jerks. That's reality. But a lot of these military folks, including folks I might have known, will come back and say, well, Dan, what do we replace war with? Because it seems like people love war. And I will say this, when it comes to violence, when it comes to aggression, there is that aspect of the human animal. I'll admit that. I'm not really a pacifist. If you're asking me, well, Dan, do you want people to turn in their guns? No, actually. I think every human being, every living thing has a right to fight for its life. Every living thing has this right by birth. Governments don't give you the right to fight to exist. It's part of who you are if you're a living thing. The alternative to us killing each other, these things exist. I think free speech, I think free expression is an alternative. People can express themselves. And if you allow them to, recognizing that true free speech means sometimes you're going to hear shit that offends you. I'm really sorry about that. But actual free speech means you have to let the Hitler talk. If Hitler wants to talk about Hitler nonsense in the public square, you have to let him talk. But guess what? In an actual free society, Hitler's probably going to be working as a janitor someplace. That's reality. Hitler doesn't get far in a free society. In a hooker democracy, like the Weimar Republic or like Seattle, Washington, Hitler would do really well. But in an actual free society and not a hooker democracy, Hitler doesn't do well in a free society. The Hitlers of the world, the nasty people, the Pol Pots, the Jim Joneses, the cult leaders and the scumbags, the sociopaths, the racketeers, the grifters, the politicians, these people do not do well in a free world. So we have to have free speech. We have to have a free world if we want to have peace. But I do think that on a certain level, art itself, art, the expression of art, that's A-R-T, is a kind of replacement for war. Art can be a way for people, in the light of free speech, free expression, to say powerful things, disturbing things, but things that don't kill people or blow up towns or leave people without a place to live or poison their water. Art can do a lot of different things without hurting people. So if you're going to ask me what the alternative to war is, it's really quite simple. Liberty, commerce, which means an actual free market, not this fucking shit we have now, and art. And I think we are all admonished by our birth to be who we are and to be artists, to express ourselves. That's what I think. I think we could do 2 weeks without killing each other and harming each other. And I think then all of a sudden we'd say to ourselves, holy fuck, we'd like to just keep this going. And pretty much that's just the way it's going to be. Now, I'll also tell you, there are people who run the world right now who hate this idea. The fact that I'm talking about this probably has put me on several lists. Holy fuck, Dan's talking about a 2 week holiday from blowing people up. Yeah, I am talking about that. I'm talking about 2 weeks a fucking year of not setting people on fire. But I am talking about something deeper. I guess I'm asking, could the whole human race, everybody, military and civilian, for 2 weeks a year, not kill each other or harm each other? Could they do that? Could they simply conduct their business and live in peace without violence? And yeah, people will say offensive things, and yeah, people will have protests, and yeah, painters will paint paintings, and people will produce graffiti that frankly can often be art and is art. People will express themselves, and some of these expressions might make you wince, some of them might make you upset. But as long as they're not forcing you to watch or listen to see or hear, as long as they're not harming an animal or a child or anyone in the process of making their art, as long as they're obeying the 2 week truce of not harming their fellow man, yeah, you might get offended by some of the words you hear from Hitler the janitor. But Hitler the janitor doesn't succeed in a free world. He only succeeds in the tyranny. Anywho, I think this is the closeout for this little Saigon report. I technically have to do my final monitoring of my process. We're on 112. Alert, alert, alert. We're on step 112. And, we're almost to the Coastalizer. Warm up the Coastalizer. Uncle Dan wants to go out on a town tonight, dressed up like Jacques Cousteau. You fuck. Have a good one.